Probability is the chance an event will occur.
It's more than Gans Pedersen, but you've got to go back to the contribution of David Bentley.
The goal is, it's an own goal from Popovic, but it's set up by a piece of genius from Dimitar Berbatov.
And Martin Atkinson, I think, has got the red card out.
Yakubu takes it and scores!
When we speak about probability or chance, we are referring to the odds of an event occurring.
All right, welcome along to Team 33's Fantasy Premier League slot with Owen Sheehan. No Tommy Rooney today, unfortunately.
He's on a junket in Chicago. It was totally my decision not to go to Chicago. Definitely wasn't like process of selection or anything like that.
Okay. Just to get that one out there. Yeah. But you're here anyway, that's the important
thing.
That
came from the heart right there.
Yeah, it did. I could tell quite easily. How was your weekend fantasy-wise?
Yeah, really good weekend. I think, to be honest with you, if you didn't get 50-plus this week, you're going to be struggling big time in terms of averages, in terms of keeping up with your friends in your mini-leagues. And I think there probably is a few people listening who are like, God, I had a crap week. Or perhaps didn't realise I had a crap week until the week was over and they saw their game week rank because it was such a high-scoring week. I mean, any week where you've got Sergio Aguero essentially scoring a hat-trick with two goals and one assist, that's only like 1 point short of a hat-trick for a striker. Any week that happens, you're going to have massive scoring. Particularly though, this week I noticed like the defensive side of things really kind of picked up for a lot of people. Personally, I've had plenty of weeks where all my forwards have scored goals, but very rarely have I ever had a week where all the defensive players I've had on the pitch have all notched up clean sheets. So, I mean, I've had plenty of weeks where all my three forwards have scored goals, but very rarely do you get a week where all the defenders that you select end up coming up trumps and getting clean sheets. Like, starting from the back, Tom Heaton, a lot of people would have had him. He really kind of set into stone at the weekend that he is the best fantasy football goalkeeper in the game right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he is. I don't think there's any question about that. I think in terms of price, I think in terms of the way Burnley set up, and in terms of pedigree, let's not forget that two seasons ago when Burnley were last in the Premier League, I think he was second or third top scoring goalkeeper, which is an unbelievable statistic given that you usually pay for what you get in terms of goalkeepers, like your David De Gea's, your Petr Cech's usually come out on tops. But this week, Tom Heaton really just kind of put his case forward saying, nah, you can start me every single game. There's almost a case to be made here that you can play Tom Heaton and a non-playing 4.0 goalkeeper in your goalkeeper slot and save all that money and just play Heaton every week. As it turns out, a lot of people would have Ben Foster, which is a situation that I have, and are more willing to rotate like that. But certainly Heaton, anybody who had him at the weekend, kind of represented in a microcosm this great defensive week that people had. I know Antonio Valencia would have been a big frustration for a lot of people in the weekend just gone. That being said, United got a clean sheet themselves, so any of those Luke Shaw owners or Eric Bailly or their Daily Blind owners would have all picked up points.
Interestingly, Daily Blind has picked up 46 points so far this season. It's only 5.8. Is he kind of almost essential, given that Man United may be struggling on the other end of the pitch, but defensively at least, in terms of clean sheets, they're doing okay.
Now, 5.8, I wouldn't say that's anywhere near essential, to be honest. I think Luke Shaw comes in...
Just given he also takes set pieces.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I suppose he is only 0.3, I think, more expensive than Luke Shaw. The set pieces thing is obviously a big thing. And as you say, United, despite the fact that the press and the whole narrative has been to lambast United, this is just another example of why you need to separate fantasy from the reality of football, because defensively they've been okay. They haven't been great. There hasn't been any great defensive team up until the last couple of games of Chelsea, which we'll get to in a second. But certainly Daily Blind, if you have him in your team, he's worth keeping. But at the same time, I could see, first of all, a case why you might transfer him out because you can get better value at a cheaper rate in the defence. But second of all, I certainly wouldn't be transferring him in at any stage. Like, even when you look at Manchester United's fixtures, they've got Swansea away next week before Arsenal, West Ham, Everton and Spurs. They're not great fixtures. They're not good enough to be able to outlay 5.8 million into your defence. So for me, Daily Blind is someone that I'm kind of on the avoid side of the fence with. Mm. I can totally see your point because of set pieces, but it's still a gamble. Like, the most solid thing you can have in any defender is clean sheets. You can have all the kind of the bells and whistles of set pieces and stuff, but only every so often did I ever come through with some points.
Which is important given Chelsea are starting to keep clean sheets. They move to a 3-4-3, which means Marcos Alonso is pushed up a little bit further forward at left wing back. Just them generally, when you're kind of, I'm assuming maybe there's maybe two players from that team you would kind of pick out. So maybe just have one defensive, is it? And then maybe a Hazard, or if you're going to have a striker, Costa.
Yeah, it's a good point. There's one, like, they're probably the only team right now that you can pick somebody in every line of the pitch and kind of see as a very, very good option. Like, as you say, Marcus Alonso right now looks to be the best defender in the game. But, like, just looking into the rest of the options they have, Cesar Azpilicueta has picked up 5 bonus points in the last 4 games. Now, I know he doesn't have as much of a goal threat as Marcus Alonso, but this is just another example of something that defenders can bring in a solid sense that, you know, every couple of weeks, Azpilicueta is not just going to leave you with a clean sheet, he's going to give you a bonus point as well. As we've seen, he's done that 4 games in a row, which is surely we're onto something here that this is going to continue.
Yeah.
Alonso probably is going to score more at the opposite end of the pitch, but picking between those two is a very, very tough one. I certainly would go for one of them, and they'd be the two defenders that stand out. Victor Moses, unfortunately, is picking up the berth at the other side of the pitch. He's not good enough attacking-wise to justify using up one of your midfield slots, and it's just a shame that it is a midfielder that Conte is using in that right-wing back position. While I love Victor Moses as a footballer, I'm delighted for him because of the cult status he used to earn for us fantasy football managers at Wigan in particular. The fact that Conte is using him as a defender position just takes up another option we might have at the back. But it's one to certainly keep an eye on if Moses does get injured. But you know, Chelsea, 100%, the top defensive team at the moment. And Marcus Alonso or Cesar Azpilicueta are the two guys you need to be looking at. But you need cash for them. They're quite expensive.
Unfortunately. You're talking about maybe moving towards a 3-5-2 as a kind of system at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Gundogan is the man who's kind of, or Gundogan or Gundoyan or however you're going to pronounce the name.
5.6.
5.6 is what he is now.
Fantasy, yeah.
Last Friday night you could have gotten him for 5.4. Quarter of a million fantasy managers have transferred him into his team now. He's now owned by 7.5% of the game. It's a bandwagon. This is the big bandwagon of November.
Yeah, there's something just on him, given his past goal-scoring record. It kind of brings to mind Dr. Phil. I don't know if you've done the, sitting in, watching TV during the day, well, kind of early morning.
I've seen Dr. Phil plenty.
Yeah.
I love Dr. Phil, a bit of that moustache.
He has a great quote where, like, the best predictor of future behaviour is past behaviour.
That's a good line, actually.
It's a brilliant line. I don't know how meaningful it is in terms of real life.
Well, not to Zlatan Ibrahimovic, clearly.
No. But in terms of Gundogan, he's scored 15 goals in 157 games for Dortmund previously. Wow. He already has 5 in 10 for City. So I'm wondering, is this just a bandwagon that will probably dry out, or are we seeing something here that might have long-term potential, given his price as well?
Yeah. Well, you see, if this was a bandwagon based, like, I want to compare this to Nasser Chadli, which is a really weird comparison to make. When Chadli had that explosive first game, we didn't see this sort of bandwagon because fantasy managers, in the whole anyway, aren't completely stupid. Mm-hmm. They're like, right, Chadli was okay at Spurs, but look at where he is now. West Brom aren't going to score all those goals. It's going to be very, very hard for him to continue that output. However, now when you look at Ilkay Gundogan, you suddenly see that the narrative is that Pep has found how to get the best out of this player. And that's a very exciting idea for any fantasy football manager. They've got a 5.6 midfielder who's just scored 2 goals and an assist against West Brom, and scored another 2 goals against Barcelona midweek. That this guy is not only in unbelievable form, but he's being moulded by one of the greatest managers of all time. Before the Barcelona game, I would have said, nah, once De Bruyne is fit and ready to go for a full 90 minutes, he's going to come back in and automatically take Gundogan's place. But they both played, they both started. I'm not sure, did De Bruyne get taken off? Certainly Gundogan played the full 90 minutes against Barcelona, which was a very, very encouraging sign. I personally am going to wait a week because I feel comfortable enough that if City hammer a team this weekend, they're playing Middlesbrough this weekend. Middlesbrough at home this weekend. So, first of all, there's a huge chance they could hammer them. There's an argument there to be made that you need 2 people in that Man City attack to really get the most of that. But I'm happy enough having just Aguero for that because I'll feel pretty much well enough covered for that fixture as long as I've got the armband on Aguero. The reason why I say that is because I think Nolito is still a threat to the place of Gundogan. They'll be able to move that around, go back to their Nolito and Sterling either side of Aguero up front. And they've still got like De Bruyne, Fernandinho, Silva to play in the centre of midfield. So I think Gundogan is still a rotation threat, despite the fact that he's been the star of the last 7 months in European football.
Yeah.
7 days, I should say.
Yeah. Joe Allen. Now, I was watching that Stoke game against Swansea. He was outstanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's 5.2 and he's delivered 55 points already.
Yeah. But this is getting around to your 3-5-2 points.
Exactly, yeah. Cheap midfielder, but is he kind of essential for that system?
He, like, Joe Allen is another bandwagon that we can stop calling a bandwagon now, because he's actually proved it, and he would be the sole reason why people are going to start moving towards a 3-5-2. And it's not necessarily because funds are being moved towards the midfield, because you can get these players on a cheap quite often. The only problem is that unless you've got Aguero, Costa and Lukaku as your front three, outside of that trio, there's very few people that you can see as start every week, week in, week out, captaincy option material. So therefore, if you don't have that trio up front, you're looking at bench options automatically up front. Mm-hmm. And that just allows someone like Joe Allen and Gundogan to come in at a cheaper price in your midfield and start them every week. Of course, these all come with a health warning, because it's very hard for someone at that price. I think like we keep going back to last year because it was so incredible, but Mahrez was probably the first midfielder last season who had that price tag and managed to justify for the whole season going forward. Having him in your team for the whole season made sense last year. Joe Allen and Gundogan, I'm not so sure. You look at Swansea's fixtures, they've got United and Everton in the next two. They've got an away trip to Spurs in 4 weeks' time. They're tricky games. And you look at Etienne Capoue this year, who's already completely tailed off. You look at Mikhail Antonio, who's also completely tailed off. And these guys do come with a health warning. But for the time being, the 3-5-2 makes a lot of sense. I just wonder, once you get closer to Christmas and the fixtures kind of turn again, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to maintain that.
Yeah. One player who has kind of dropped off the radar again, it is Son of Spurs.
Yeah.
But now Harry Kane is coming back, which provides another option now. The North London Derby, of course, he's got a really good record in that, but he's only coming back from injury, so we're not sure what shape he's going to be in.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're going to wait on Kane. Son, obviously, I'm assuming it's get rid.
Yeah, it kind of is at that stage. Some people might be more tied up with other options and might feel it necessary to leave him in there for a while, which is fine. I'm not sure if Sissoko's still out for this weekend. I think he is.
Yeah.
I think this will only be the second or third game of his ban for that elbow on Harry Arter. So that probably gives Son a little bit of a lifeline in terms of staying in the team. And for someone like me who's a Son owner, I just kind of want to kind of remind myself of what Son is like in a team that features Harry Kane, because Son is doing well before Kane's injury as well. I know once he moved to the centre, and that game against Man City in particular, where people were like, wow, this guy is unbelievable. And again, that's another thing outside of the fantasy community, the general public started to view this guy as a really, really good centre forward in the absence of Kane. But I can see him being shifted out to the left-hand side unless Eric Lamella comes back into the team at the weekend. And I think that could be good for him. Like, he didn't do too badly at the weekend.
It's actually his natural position as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think some people are forgetting how good he actually was in that position before Kane got injured. And maybe in a weird way, Kane's injury was bad for Son. Maybe it was a fluke in the middle going through the centre. Maybe we need him back out on the left hand side. And also,
although I think you'd already flagged the whole issue with, you know, travelling for international games, which is about to happen again. So
yeah, that is the thing.
That could be the problem with him. Maybe in these coming months, December, January, we might actually see him being a bit more consistent, because he's not worrying about having to travel to the other side of the world.
Well, hopefully, yeah. I mean, like, that would be what we hope we get from Son. But personally, I just think he is on a downward spiral. I think we're going to see a lot of transfers out, and that exodus from the Son bandwagon is going to continue over the next couple of weeks. My point I just made there about Kane and how he might be better out on the left and when Kane is back is purely based on hope.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm a Son owner, I do fear for Son. I fear for his place in the Spurs team as well. I think Eric Lamella can force his way back into that team, regardless of the fact that Lamella might be playing a game in Argentina or wherever they're playing next weekend. I think with Spurs, we've just got to take a look at the North London Derby this weekend and suss out what Pochettino's first strength Premier League team is, because we'll certainly know that after Sunday.
Yeah, I suppose finally, Wilfred Bony, given you're going 3-5-2, even though he scored against Swansea, it's probably best to kind of park him to the side, I guess.
Maybe if you had him in your team, he could be a perfect 3-5-2, because you could bench him every couple of weeks and play him for a good home game. Like, Stoke's fixtures are continuing. Like, they've got West Ham, Bournemouth, Watford and Burnley in the next four. They're four very good fixtures, two of which are at home, which are Bournemouth and Burnley. Like, you'd be very confident having Wilfred Bony in your team for those two games.
Yeah.
Bony.
It's up to him to decide.
Match of the day commentators and their conflicting views on that name has really confused me. Like Stoke themselves are going very well. The back is where you look at for Stoke.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about Lee Grant on this podcast in the past, and he's really proved either myself or Tommy right. I'll let you go back and have a listen back to that podcast as mm-hmm. to which one of us was the man who said Lee Grant is good and the other man said no, it's a fluke. But look at Stoke now, high flyers, and even up front they've got a man now as well.
Yeah, and very quickly, captaincy.
Aguero, home to Middlesbrough.
Perfect.